You are listening to the United States of Football Show, your source for American soccer news, views, and opinions. Hello again, everybody. We are back. This is the United States of Football Show, the opening show for the new MLS season. We're recording this on March 12th, 2014. My name is Earl Reed, and with me is Robert Hay, as always. Robert, how are things?
They're going all right. I'm almost as good as Mike Pecky getting a contract extension after a 4-1 loss, but not quite that good, I guess.
Well, if you were paid to do what you love, then I guess you would be, but I guess
I am paid to do what I am paid to do what I love. Just in case any of my coworkers are listening.
Yeah, so same with me. We all love our jobs, and you know, in this kind of economy, job market, you are happy to be paid, and that we are. But we are not paid to do this, so please go easy on us if we're a little ragged.
But or give us money.
Or give us money, yeah, then we would be paid. So, having said that, we are going to move into our first section. We could talk about the MLS season, and we actually will later, but we thought we would start with something that came up last week. In the lead-up to the MLS season, there were a couple of articles that ran on the alt sports website, Deadspin. Is that how you would call it, define it?
Well, you know, at this point, I don't even know if Deadspin is an alt. I mean, they've had a pretty good run recently of breaking some major news stories, you know, the Manti Te'o story and a couple others that the more mainstream press like ESPN and Fox Sports haven't been able to get to. So whether it's luck or whether it's good journalism is up to you to decide. But they're increasingly becoming a mainstream sports website, even though if they are a little rough around the edges. I mean, they're very much a part of the front line of sports conversation.
So they're kind of like Pearl Jam now, except, you know.
Except people like Pearl Jam, and half the people who read Deadspin hate Deadspin.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of the reason why people read this first article, which I guess we will. We'll go ahead and link the article in the text on the Simply Football website if you want to go check it out. Basically, the title of it was, Are You Getting Ready for MLS? Allow Us to Convince You Otherwise. And basically, it was I wrote an article about it on the Simply Football website, and basically my take on it was Deadspin loves to get people mad. You know, that's half of their intention with, you know, the things they put up there. You know, they aren't out there just, you know, some of it is good journalism. Some of it is, you know, like you said, the expose on Manti Te'o and et cetera, but some of it is simply out there to get page views and to get under the skin of people. Like, they run this segment that's like, why your NFL team sucks. Before, you know, every team gets blasted with every, so, you know, it's really like low-hanging fruit. Like, Drew McGarry is the guy who does it, and he'll throw out, you know, if you're from anywhere that's somewhat backwoods, you know, they'll call, you know, he'll call you a mouth breathing, knuckle dragging, you know, it's just, or if you've had any scandals, you know, or, you know, your team's thought about, you know, it's just, he's going to dig up every last little thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what this article did. It's just sort of like sitting there with a screwdriver trying to poke at your brain. So, I don't know. Any other thoughts about it, Robert? I mean, you read it as well. And
I did. You know, I think a couple of thoughts on it. First of all, I agreed with some of the stuff he said, especially about it not being the best league in the world and having to admit that. You know, we here in the United States love the best things in life, you know, whether that's the best sports teams, the best leagues, the best food. You know, we're used to the best, and we root for the best and pay attention to the best. Maybe that's why we have so many reality TV shows. But you know, he's right. The MLS is competing with the best soccer leagues in the world, and in this market, probably going to lose. You know, people are going to point to the increased ratings in Major League Soccer, increased attendance and all that. But at the end of the day, you know, Major League Soccer still can't hold a candle to the Premier League in terms of attention. Probably even La Liga, Serie A, the Bundesliga. I won't go as far to say Ligue 1, but, you know, it's still trailing behind these major leagues. in Europe, and that's just the way it is. So I think the article's spot on about that. You know, it talks about some of the more corporate shady practices of MLS, and which we've talked about many times on this podcast, and those are it's a pretty spot on criticism. But you know, overall, this article is just one of those attempts to get clicks, and you know what? As these articles usually do, it worked. I mean, because automatically this article was linked to by 100 people who were up in arms about the message behind it. And I guess we're adding to that, although I really don't have a problem with it because I think, you know, I'm not opposed to this kind of writing being out there. But, you know, the intent, which is to get the article out there and the author's name out there, worked because, you know, you had all these MLS fans writing about this and tweeting about this and trashing him and, you know, standing up for the league. And meanwhile, they're quoting this article and linking to it, and it's getting all over the place. So it probably got more attention than it would have otherwise, except for the fact that people took umbrage at it.
Right. And I think a lot of what he came at was from the standpoint that MLS has a vast, you know, this is a tough word to say, but a vast propaganda wing, basically, that, you know, they have a lot of paid writers. They have people making content for them on a daily basis. They not only have that, but there are plenty of, you know, writers for each of the teams. Some of those writers sort of moonlight for not only the team, but for another outlet, like within SB Nation or with another, you know, Goal or, you know, so there's a lot of interplay within these organizations. And so, you know, if you are an MLS fan, which, you know, you and I both are, yes, you're going to go ahead and read, you know, on occasion, you might click on a link from, you know, Soccer by Ivis or from Goal.com or from Philly.com or from, you know, SB Nation. For, you know, I don't know. I mean, you might not do that one, but, you know, anyway, you know,
I read them all
regardless. I mean, there's so many different outlets, but it's like a lot of that is, it's not MLS edited, but it's content that is going to favorably paint MLS. You know, I think that's pretty clear. I mean, even through a lot of the ESPN blogs, you'll get that too. It's rare that you get something that is scathing like this. Usually it comes from a place like Simply Football or, you know, World Soccer Talk will have things that are a little bit more critical. You know, I think that's what a lot of people are looking for is things that are critical, things that are objective and don't just seem to gloss over some of these problems that a lot of the quote unquote Euro snob, I hate to use that because, you know, some people might paint me in that light just for even having the idea that this article is appropriate to talk about things like this. You know, it's like if you're a Euro snob, you believe these things about MLS, that these things are problems and that things need to change somewhat. And so for someone to come out and actually say that is perfectly acceptable. And yes, it gets a lot of people who are, you know, a part of some of the, you know, networks that are out there that tend to, again, paint MLS in a good light. You can't argue that MLS needs some help in this market. This is a crowded sports market. The big four dominate ESPN and all of the, you know, your CBS Sports, your NBCs, NBC not so much anymore, but, you know, ABC, you know, it doesn't get its due. So I could see where they're coming from, but on the other hand, there are some practices within MLS that need harping on and need saying, you know, this isn't good enough. And so, you know, if you were just competing against yourself, like most other sports are, that's great. But yes, you have the Premier League that is now wedging itself into the television market and making it difficult for MLS to get a real TV package. You know, I've heard lots of reports and, you know, they're pretty favorable, but, you know, there's nothing. I mean, wouldn't you agree with me that it's going to be tough for MLS to get the kind of numbers that the EPL has gotten, right?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that any sane, reasonable person would say that. But, you know, then you have people who somehow will argue against that, who think that MLS's numbers, it's just a matter of time before they reach and surpass EPL numbers. And that's befuddling to me. They tend not to point the fact that when they see MLS numbers rising that the EPL numbers are rising just as quickly, if not quicker. I want to go back to something you said. You know, you mentioned some of the outlets that are talking about criticizing MLS and talking about some of the practices that really need reform. You know, Simply Football, World Soccer Talk, all good websites, and the others we didn't talk about. But all, you know, all these good sites out there that are talking about and advocating for reforms, more openness, and things like that. I think that's one of the things that bothers me about this article is, you know, I don't think it was a serious attempt to do that. It was just trolling, and it got so much attention. If it would have been a more serious article, maybe it wouldn't have gotten the attention it did. But I think it was a missed opportunity by Deadspin and by the writers to put a positive agenda out there. I mean, it just came across as trolling the league and trying to, you know, stick a finger in its eye, you know, almost beating up on a little kid or something. If it would have been a more serious look at, you know, the league's practices, and it touches on it at times, then it would have been a much more impactful article. But as it is, it makes it easier to mock because.
Well, let me ask you. Yeah. Can I ask you this?
Yes, you may.
So what do you. Do you think that this could be a response to the fact that there have been plenty of articles that do approach it from a sensible standpoint, and yet MLS continues to thumb their nose at these articles and the idea that there needs to be more transparency, the economic situation needs to improve for the lowest, you know, the lowest paid players, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, is that, you know, if you want to succeed at the CONCACAF Champions League, you're going to need to, you know, open the checkbook some and make it so it's not just three players that get paid over the $400,000. Do you think that's has anything to do with it, or do you think this is just we're trying to, you know, piss somebody off and, you know, get a bunch of clicks?
I think that based on their business model in the past, I think this is we're just trying to get a bunch of clicks. And I think that's unfortunate because Deadspin has established itself to the point, like I said, where it's almost can be taken as a serious journal, depending on what it publishes. I mean, they do good research, and even if their practices aren't exactly journalism 101, they still, you know, pursue stories. They publish stuff that's out there, and they beat, you know, mainstream, you know, sites and play other, you know, mainstream places to these stories. So, I mean, they are a player in this field. And so I think if they would have pushed something a little bit more serious, then they could do that and they would get attention and things like that. But I think they just went for the cheap clicks and said, you know what, let's just make fun of MLS because that's what everybody does. I mean, that's what the mainstream sports media does at this point. Let's be honest, even 19 years in, MLS is still a butt of a joke for a lot of people. And let's just go along with that instead of trying to do something a little bit more constructive.
So then a couple days after, or maybe it was even the day after that this article was published, a second article was published by Deadspin, written by former FC Dallas player Bobby Warshaw, excuse me. And this was basically I wouldn't say it was an out-and-out endorsement of MLS, but it was definitely more of a rebuttal to what the first article was. So I didn't read that through and through. I had kind of had enough of this whole, you know, I read plenty of advocacies of of MLS. So, you know, I guess what my take home from both of these articles is, you know, I don't know how many neutrals are going to read these and ever decide for themselves whether or not they're going to watch a soccer match because of it, which kind of makes the whole practice, the whole exercise kind of futile. And, you know, what exactly are they, you know, other than the page clicks, are they trying to do? You know, that's my analysis of it. You know, it just seems like yet another exercise in just filling up bandwidth with, you know, characters and page returns.
And that's what gets them paid. I mean, in the world of online journalism, advertising will get you paid, and clicks get advertisers, and advertisers make you money. So, you know, to that extent, you can't fault them for wanting to do this every once in a while. But, you know, the second article, to go back on that for a second, I didn't really read it because I started reading the first three paragraphs and it read too much like an essay. And I just, you know, when you start on an article talking about how you're reading, you know, the story at your kitchen table one morning, and it's like, all right, you take three paragraphs to get to the point of what your article is about, then you're probably going to lose me pretty quickly unless it's something life or death. So it wasn't even that great of an article to begin with.
Oh, but if you are an MLS supporter, Oh, this Bobby Warshaw is like the best writer ever, according to each of them.
Well, he went to Stanford, so automatically that makes him best at everything.
Well, yeah, I think he's probably a good writer, but I guess my point is that his writing ability has been endorsed by all these people because he's a soccer player, but probably more importantly because he is
he agrees with them.
Yeah, because he helps, put down an article that they completely disliked, which, I mean, I don't exactly like that first article either. I thought it was a lot of, a lot of tripe, a lot of hate. I believe in writing about things that I like, and I would prefer not to do a lot of hate writing. I mean, there is times to decry something if you think it's going to help, but if you're just writing something in a hateful tone because you are just ticked off at it and you know it's not going to get any better,
you're true.
Then go write about something that you like. Yeah. That's me. I can be a Statler or Waldorf, I can be a critic, but I don't know. The hate that was thrown in that just, it was clearly out to get some dander up and make some people angry. So.
Yeah, and it worked. And so that way it won because, it achieved what it wanted to do. And, at the end of the day, Deadspin's a winner in this and MLS and is a loser. And, all these, nobody else gets a win out of it except Deadspin in the office.
I don't know if MLS is a loser out of this because I think that regardless, they're out there hoping that people will, recognize their name. Mm-hmm. And the more that, in my article that I wrote for Simply Football, it's like, this is the type of thing that MLS just needs to like brush off its shoulder and say, hey, they do this about the NFL. They do this about the NBA. They make fun of lots of players, lots of teams, lots of fan bases. Let them make fun of us. It's kind of like, the celebrity roast. Eventually, Charlie Sheen gets his, Gilbert Gottfried gets his, all these guys. I mean, it's sort of like you've earned your place at the throne. So, MLS, I don't think that means MLS has ascended to that, to the level of these other sports yet, but I think it's on its way. So just, eat your pudding and be happy that you're getting mentioned. But I like tapioca, especially.
Okay. We differ there. I had a really good point to make, and that discussion of pudding put me off of it.
Pudding pop? No.
No, it wasn't that. Well, it's okay. Here's my point. So we talk about the being a thin skinned league and the, let's be honest, it's probably the league office that's reacting to these kind of things and gets its dander up and all that. Do you think this is a result of the structure of the league? The fact that everything is controlled essentially by the main office. I mean, the teams are all owned by MLS entity. They control everything about the league. They control the player salaries. They used to control the referees. We're going to get to that later. But they have so much control over this league that in the instances where they don't have control is what really bothers them. Is that what this is all about, really, do you think? It's the way the league is structured? I mean, the NFL has Goodell, who's an all-powerful god. But, he's also at the whim of the owners. MLS, Don Garber technically is at the whim of the owners, but there really isn't owners either. It's just renters.
I think the tough part is that it's very, very, a very clandestine group, and you don't really know the inner workings of it. So, and I think that they try to make it very hush hush and secretive how everything works. I mean, we know that it's centrally owned and whatnot, and that there is a lot of, we'll say control over what information gets put out there, salaries and all this type of stuff. Yes, it's still very secretive. And so we don't even know to the level of, I guess last week it was a big hubbub because the roster rules got released like the day before the matches started. And it's like, so how many of these teams knew the roster rules have the financial implications, what teams are allowed to do as far as, signing players and DPs and all this stuff. It's like, why can't that stuff be made public? So maybe that's one reason, is because it's so hush hush. And so the league, when someone decides to take them to task for it, they aren't within the, the league doesn't really have control over someone either at Deadspin or over, let's say, with the Guardian, although they seem to have some people that they work with at the Guardian nowadays. But, you know, it's like overseas, you know, it's like, I'm trying to remember, there was an article last year about Toronto. I'm trying to remember. I remember. Someone took Toronto to task, and it was from a British author. I would have to go back and look and dig it up, but it's, and again, MLS people took it to task. You know, it had all the things that, you know, it had the guy writing the MLS, which is sort of like the you know, that automatically ticks, you know, you off to be a non MLS lover, because if you love MLS, you don't say the MLS ever.
Exactly.
So anytime there is someone outside the scope of league control, whether that control is, I mean, it may or may not be there. There may not be any league control, but it gives that impression when there's sort of it seems almost a fiat where, oh, we're going to go and, you know, we found this article. Now we have to have the bevy of people who are in this circle of MLS media type people. We're going to go and get on Twitter and, throw out lots of, stuff to drag it down. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess we probably devoted too much time to this, but, you know, I guess my thought is, be open-minded. Read lots of different things. You're going to get lots of articles if you like MLS from the MLS website. You're going to get lots of articles from guys that, not only, they write independently, but also do write for MLS. And it's like you kind of have to use a filter and understand where things are coming from. And, you know, there's nothing saying that the stuff coming from the MLS office is wrong. It's just make sure you balance it and that you understand that not everything is, you know, perfect. You know, there are things that this league can improve at, and we will discuss them here on the show routinely as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, until the level of competition in this league, not necessarily the competitiveness level, but until this league can challenge Mexico for a CONCACAF Champions League victory, you know, this league is not going to garner a lot of attention.
Nope.
You know, and it's just people are going to look at it and continually run it down, regardless of how many Caleb Porters come in the league that make their teams more attractive, or, you know, whatever you want to say. So anyway, I mean, any other thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, just one last thought is, you know, I follow and read stuff for people on Twitter who think that, you know, FC Dallas has a great attendance and is growing in attendance every year. And on the other end of the spectrum, I read Soccer Reform. So just, yeah, I'll echo your point about read everybody and everything as much as possible. Get different perspectives and don't get locked into, you know, one type of fandom. I mean, we go through so much of this in real life, in politics, religion, ethics, everything else. You know, let's keep our sports and our soccer as bipartisan and as open as possible. Let's not fall into those same traps with our beautiful game.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely things out there that I would say are not worth reading. You know, if you're talking about bigoted stuff, if you're talking about, you know, I mean, certainly we aren't talking about things like that. We're talking about, you know, in specifically in the realm of soccer and Major League Soccer, just if someone's telling you not to read something that's about Major League Soccer, then there's probably something wrong with that, I believe. You know, I don't think that there's going to be anything written out there that isn't worth at least reading. And if you want to dismiss it from that point forward, that's fine. But I don't like the idea that, oh, something is off limits and is going to like corrupt your mind, or you know,
unless it's tweeted by Joey Barton.
Even if it is tripe, like this first Deadspin article, there was a lot of, you know, crap in it that was just inflammatory. Mm-hmm. But hey, there were a few points in there that made some sense. And so anyway, I think we've come to the end of this conversation, and I'm sure that there will be more times to talk about this type of thing.
Undoubtedly.
The next time an article comes out that ticks off a lot of people. So anyway, we will return to the United States of Football Show here in just a second. Listen to the B-side shuffle as we go to break. We will return and talk about the matches from the first week of the Major League Soccer season. This is the United States of Football Show. And we're back on the United States of Football Show. There is the B-side shuffle. We gotta get that new song of theirs. I know they have some new material out, and you listeners are probably sick of hearing. Maybe not. Maybe
no, they're not sick of hearing them.
Just those same old tunes, but they have some new stuff out. So go check them out. BsideShuffle.com is the place to go to get your copy of that and to check them out, because they are good, and they may be coming to a town near you sometime soon. So bsideshuffle.com, like we said. Earl Reed, Robert Hay, and we're going to talk about the first weekend of MLS action, the 2014 season. I've been pretty excited about this for the last couple of weeks. I'm not 100% sure why, but I guess...
why not?
I think part of it is, you know, it's good having soccer that is in the same, like, time zone and in your area. I mean, I don't get to go to as many matches as I was for a couple of years there, but I don't know. I think, and you know, we're pretty familiar with most of the players that are in our league, I think. You know, you get so used to them that, I mean, I can watch the EPL, but there's a lot of changes within the league from year to year, and you get a lot of just sometimes it can be tough to keep track of all the players that change hands, and it can be that way in MLS. But for the most part, I think you get from year to year, you know, pretty much the storylines stay similar. So
I think it's a morning person versus evening person kind of thing. I'm a morning person. I rather enjoy waking up at 7:30 or waking up before 7:30 and watching an EPL game. But that's just me.
I can watch both, but I don't know. There's something about MLS that, you know, it's not perfect, but it's, you know, good enough. And so anyway, let's get into these matches. Talking it to death. Seattle, the first match of the season, Seattle faced Sporting Kansas City at CenturyLink Field. It was on national television on the NBC Sports Network. And it looked like it was going to go to a scoreless draw. It seems to be national television's curse in most cases.
Yeah, good way to start the season, scoreless draw for MLS.
I mean, you know, chalk it up to MLS to, you know, it's funny. There have been some quotes here in the last couple of days from Ryan Nelson basically, you know, lambasting the turf at CenturyLink being basically the worst pitch in MLS. Hmm. And, you know, so you get MLS seeming to put first kick always being at CenturyLink, and you know, you get these low scoring affairs a lot of times in the rain, and but Seattle got the 1-0 victory over the defending MLS Cup champions. Chad Barrett scored, you know, kind of bundled it over there at the very end, towards the end of stoppage time. It looked like Kansas City was going to escape after arresting some players anticipation of actually tonight they're in the CCL, the CONCACAF Champions League. But so they rested their fullbacks and Oriel Rosell and whatnot. But Seattle gets the victory. I forget exactly what you. I think we both actually picked Seattle up near the top. I think I picked Seattle first. and you may have as well.
Yeah, so they were up
West.
There.
Yeah, so, but, you know, Sporting Kansas City, you know, it's tough to lead off the season right after you win MLS Cup and just be clicking on all cylinders, and I think they have a lot of matches coming up here with, like I said, the CONCACAF Champions League and and whatnot. So, it's, you know, it's tough, you know, tough to go out and lose on the road to start the season, but, pretty much a gritty affair. I guess you might expect that with Kansas City and Seattle. You know, Seattle has Ozzie Alonso. You know, Sporting Kansas City has that back line, which is typical. You know, especially the center backs are pretty, you know, tough as nails. And I was surprised that Andy Greenebaum is not the starting goalkeeper for Sporting Kansas City.
That surprised me too.
It's Kronberg is actually got the nod. So, you know. I don't know if he has a lot of fault on this goal. He may very well have, but, you know, it's like you have a backup there. You know, the backup now is a guy who made a lot of good headlines in Columbus for a couple of years. So, you know, you have to think that, you know, Greenebaum is going to be called in there if, you know, Peter Vermees has any kind of, you know, concerns about Kronberg's ability to, you know, tend the goal. So yeah, so Seattle is off the marks, and Robert, let's go to the one of the late games on Saturday. We'll move to, because it's kind of a big, call it a big affair, because it was the LA Galaxy hosting Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, this one was up past my bedtime, so I had to catch it a little bit later than it actually happened. Real Salt Lake escapes from Los Angeles, escape from LA with a 1-0 victory. Joel Plata with a goal in the 80th minute, which is only a tip of the iceberg to how this game went. There was controversy everywhere and anywhere in this game, and we'll talk a little bit more about the officials later on, but they did play a role in this one. This was a game where LA basically had the clear majority of the chances and the clear majority, I believe, of the possession as well. I don't have the exact stats here in front of me, but basically, if you looked just at the stat box, it was, you know, this is a game that looked like it should have been LA's to win. 27 attempts on goal versus 9 for Real Salt Lake. Possession 51% to LA, et cetera, et cetera. They had some very good chances in this game. Both teams did early on, but really, I think it was in the 33rd minute, Robbie Keane had a brilliant chance to put LA up ahead. He basically, Raimondo had a poor clearance to basically straight to Donovan, who made a nice little pass to a wide open in front of the goal, Robbie Keane, who basically hit it off the crossbar, kind of embarrassing. So the major controversy happened in the 76th minute. A goal by Luke Mulholland, I believe it was called, was waved off for offsides, even though it looked like he was clearly onside. He basically was cleaning up a goal, a scramble in front of the goal, and looked like he had two defenders behind him, and he was level with the keeper, but they still was waved off. However, Joel Plata makes up for it a couple minutes later with a beautiful goal on a pass by Kyle Beckerman, pretty much beating the LA backline, who I think looked a little shaky in this match. The major talking point coming out was, of course, the penalty call in the 90th plus minute and stoppage time in the second half. Robbie Keane, well, the call was Robbie Keane was undercut by, I believe it was...
it was actually Rob Friend.
Oh, Rob Friend, I'm sorry.
He was the guy, I thought, yeah.
It was a tall striker.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely taller than Robbie Keane, though.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
sorry.
It's okay.
Tall striker. Basically, the call was that he was undercut by the defender, who I think they said was it Beltran, maybe?
I believe it was.
Yeah, I think so. But when you watch the replay, it looks like basically he tried to use his height to gain leverage and push off of Beltran and ended up just missing a pretty poor pass, I think, over the top. The referee buys in anyway, calls the penalty, and Keane did take the penalty and did not have a good one. Nick Raimondo makes a save. You know, and after a quick, you know, couple of sequences there, Real Salt Lake holds on for the win. Something interesting to note on the penalty, Luke Mulholland was clearly over the line and in the box when the penalty was taken, but that one was missed. So shaky officiating in this one, but I think the result was probably a fair one by Real Salt Lake. Good game by both teams. Poor, some defensive breakdowns, but a good result for RSL and a first win for their new head coach.
Yeah, I'd definitely say a good result for RSL. I think LA. Yeah, I think that was similar to what happened in the playoff last fall.
Yep.
I believe they faced each other, and the Galaxy had taken it to RSL, and somehow between Raimondo and maybe the post a post or two, he was unable. You know, the Galaxy were unable to score. Mm-hmm. So that's the floodgate is going to open eventually. But,
yeah.
At least in this one, yeah, they struggled to get it behind Nick Raimondo. So.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's one of the best. He's probably climbing up there close to Kevin Hartman now as far as like all-time wins, et cetera, et cetera. So,
well, speaking of pretty good, Earl, why don't you talk about Portland and Philadelphia?
Yeah, I think this was, for a Philadelphia Union supporter, this was actually a refreshing match. You think of a team going into Portland and you're basically trying to survive the onslaught, do your best to, close down lanes for guys like Diego Valeri and Darlington Nagbe. Now they have Max Arruti and a couple other, Will Johnson and whatnot. But Philadelphia went in there and pretty much took the game to the Timbers for a good portion of this match. And, Philadelphia went up in the match 1-0 on a Jack McInerney goal. A couple of new players for Philadelphia, which really made an impact on this game for them and just allowed them to pretty much boss Portland, which doesn't, like I said, doesn't really happen much. But, so in the 64th minute, Jack McInerney scoring. Christian Madonna, the new left winger, he kicked a corner in, booted it in swinger from the right side, and Maurice Adu got a flick on, which came right to McInerney, who was inside the six, and he headed it home from there to give Philadelphia the 1-0 lead, and it just looked like they were going to pull it out. They went into a little bit of more defensive shell as the game closed out. And you thought, they brought on guys like Antoine Hopinot that the Union did, and there was like a sequence where he drew three fouls right in a row down in the attacking half, where the Portland left back and the defender, I believe it was Footy Danso, the central defender. I mean, they just couldn't stop him. They kept fouling him, but Portland got it down to the Philadelphia end, and the ball went out for a corner, and it was there was probably 15 seconds left. Will Johnson gathered up real quick, took a quick corner, and Philadelphia had a bit of a lapse. They lost their focus. I don't know if they thought the game, it was a formality, that final corner, but that quick corner caught them off guard. Brian Carroll tried to clear it, but instead he mishit it, and it came right to Gaston Fernandez, who headed it home basically into an empty net where Hopinot himself was supposed to be guarding the post, and he hadn't gotten back there quite yet, and nobody was guarding Fernandez. So it was a real disappointment for the Union. Portland, a little bit lucky to get that point, but that's kind of what Portland is up to a lot of times, is even if they do end up in one of these tight matches, they seem to find a way to either pull out the draw or, find a way to get a victory late. Obviously a great home field advantage at Providence Park, not Jeldwyn Field anymore, Providence Park. But, you have to give a lot of credit to Donovan Ricketts. He held the Timbers in this match, made a lot of saves on Philadelphia. McInerney had a couple of chances. It's tough to see. You don't usually see Portland end up this way. I don't know if this is just, early season trying to get their feet underneath them. But, you have Arruti and you have Fernandez as a couple new guys that look like they're going to take a little bit of time to bed in. But once they do, Fernandez got the goal to equalize. But, Yeah. The other thing is that Padmo Duka came out about the 70th minute and looked like he was hobbled. I think that would not be a good thing for Portland if he was hurt for any length of time, but hopefully that was just a minor knock and he can get back for the next match. So both teams come away with a point. And, you know, Philadelphia, I think fans in Philadelphia are going to be happy with that performance from a revamped midfield, Vincent Nogueira, Maurice Adu, two guys that are just beasts compared to what they had last year, adding in there with Brian Carroll to just make what's probably going to be you know, a formidable central midfield in the Eastern Conference and maybe throughout the league. So we'll see how it goes, but you know, a lot of promise there for Philadelphia, and I think Portland's going to be just fine. Get the, you know, once they get these other you know, Latin players, you know, bet in and, you know, rocking and rolling. So how about your team, DC United, and the Columbus Crew?
Well, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Columbus comes out of DC with a 3-0 win to start off their season. Nice start for Greg Berhalter and his club. You know, when the starting lineups were announced on this one, I thought Columbus came out a little bit conservative. They played in a 4-4-1-1 formation, but I guess with Federico Higuain, anytime you have him on the field, you're an offensive threat. I think basically this game came down to a tactical dominance by Columbus. Pretty smart move, and this was noticed by, I'll give credit where credit's due, Black and Red United, which is a DC United blog on SB Nation, did a tactical analysis of this game and noted that really what Columbus did was allow Federico Higuain to not necessarily stick to the middle of the field, but to roam side to side. And what that did was create a mismatch for DC, because in their 4-4-2 diamond formation, Perry Kitchen was stuck in the middle. And when Higuain roamed, he basically was able to challenge, you know, pull Davy Arnone, Nick De Leon back, which did not end well for DC United, or it drew the center backs out of position, and they, Bobby Boswell, Jeff Park, were a little too slow to recover a lot of times, so that created some very good opportunities for Columbus. The three goals, you know, all well-deserved. Arrieta in the 18th minute, Higuain got himself a goal in the 27th, and then Higuain again in the 90th minute to just kind of put the nail in the game. For DC, it was a lot of the same, despite the new names and, you know, the similar formation. Still no offensive punch in this game. Really, I think they were put on the back foot by Columbus, and the fact that the Columbus defense looked pretty good. Michael Parker slotting in there next to Gonzalez, and Steve Clark looking pretty good in goal, even though he didn't need to do that much throughout most of the game. You know, for DC, Eddie Johnson just couldn't get any service, and so he was ineffective. Espíndola was pretty much kept out on the wings and limited his effectiveness there. And Luis Silva was neutralized in this game, so DC couldn't do anything to shake that. So well-deserved win for Columbus, showing some good tactical acumen. You know, I still don't know if the talent is there to be a true competitor in the East, but if they can be, you know, tactically smart and their big name players, Higuain, Arrieta, can score while the defense holds, you know, holds other teams down, then this could be a surprise playoff team. I mean, it's early to say this, but based on how they played against a bad team, you know, in this first week, it was pretty impressive. I think they came in with a really good game plan and they executed very well. You don't see that very often. I don't think you see that very often in MLS. You don't see, you know, one team just tactically come out and come in with a game plan and just execute so well that it's pretty obvious who's the better team on the field.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that speaks to Berhalter's time in Europe. You know, maybe he's...
Oh, you Europhile.
Yeah. Good point. I was going to say, I don't think you mentioned the penalty.
Oh, no, I think you're right.
You know, where...
I didn't mention it.
Yeah, which, you know, the second goal where I believe it was Parkhurst was hauled down by Perry Kitchen in the box. Like it was a bit of a, yeah, the referee, it was Andres Feferocorn.
It was a great name.
Yeah, it's a classic. It's almost as good as the Geiger counter, but But yeah, but it was a bit of point of contention. I mean, I looked at it and it's quite, you know, basically Parkhurst was trying to run after, you know, the ball had basically cleared everybody and was starting to roll towards the end line, and Parkhurst was running around the end trying to get to it, and I believe it was Kitchen kind of like grabbed a hold of him, and Parkhurst sort of lost his legs and.
Yeah.
It's probably weak. Now, I've heard stories that, you know, MLS wants to try to limit the amount of this sort of holding in the box. And, you know, if guys grab a hold of another player. So whether or not that's the case or not, certainly looked like it was here. If that's what they're doing, then I guess it was valid. But I'm not sure that MLS should be calling these types of things.
No.
But...
I also don't think it was by far the worst call in the box this weekend, which is why I was like, oh yeah, that's right. It wasn't, I mean, I can think of at least in the games I watched, probably two or three more that were more offensive than that one. So that one at least was arguable in terms of a penalty.
Yeah. So, well, so DC United, they are going to have to wait another week to get their big guy, Eddie Johnson, on track. But, yeah, Columbus, a nice start for a team that's, looking to basically, you know, build off the past and, yep. You know, with a couple, like you said, there's, you know, Arrieta and Higuain with Berhalter as the new guy in charge.
Yeah, so. We should also mention probably in the next segment the Time Warner situation with Columbus, because I think that's a fairly big deal for the not only that club, but also for MLS fans in general. So.
Sure. Well, what we'll do is we'll take our second break here. And then when we get back, we're going to talk about the referees for a little bit. We'll also, like we said, talk about the situation with the Columbus TV deal, and we'll finish out the MLS matches for the weekend. You are listening to the United States of Football Show, brought to you by Simply Football and World Football Daily.
Well, my drink's starting to get a little low, which must mean it's time for segment three of the United States of Football show. Robert Hay here with Earl Reed as usual. And we're going to talk a little bit about some news items before we finish up the scores and results of the weekend, as well as giving you late-breaking news from the CONCACAF Champions League, which by the time you hear it will be old news, but hey, it's new to us. So,
hey, bottoms up.
Exactly.
By the way.
Yes, amen to that. We danced a little bit around this topic in the first two segments, but we're going to get into it in the third. And that's the fact that some of the referees looked a little bit different this weekend in MLS. And that was because, of course, the referees union and MLS, have been in a little bit of a disagreement, which led to them being locked out. Earl, why don't you walk us through some of the details of this, and we'll talk a little bit about the impact.
Well, I think that basically the gist of it is that the referees want more money, and
that's crazy talk.
MLS doesn't want to pay them more money, and so I mean they've been in negotiations from what I understand, and it got down to the point where MLS needed to lock out the referees union because they needed to set up these quote unquote scab, if you want to call them that. It's kind of a nasty thing to call, you know, I guess that's a part of any union jargon, you know, scab officials to come in and referee matches. And so you saw a various array of officials, from one guy, Alan Kelly, who is actually like one of the leaders of the development, so Pro is MLS's referee organization, the professional referee organization. And so, you know, they train the referees union or whatever. But so this guy, Alan Kelly, he's a trainer in it, but he also was refereeing, I believe, Champions League games last fall in Europe. So, you know, this guy is a European guy and he has lots of experience. So you have everything from that to, you know, this Pfefferkorn, who I don't know how much experience he has, but, you know, it's just a situation that's not ideal. But I think the good news is that for the most part, I didn't really have a whole lot of issues. I mean, no more issues than we would normally have on an MLS weekend. I think the big takeaway was that, for the most part, the referees had a sense of decorum and were relatively, modest, even-keeled. I mean, I don't know if you feel this way, Robert, but a lot of times the referees tend to insert themselves into the game. Would you say that?
Before I talk about that, I just want to bring up the fact that when I Googled Pfefferkorn, the first two things that came up were Pfefferkorn coffee and Johannes Pfefferkorn, who was a German Catholic theologian. I think that tells his level of notoriety in this area. The thing I noticed, it was kind of the same thing you did, which was nothing. The refereeing was pretty much the same as it always has been. Not so great. Okay. Bad at times, but for the most part, whatever. The faces look different, some a little bit more out of shape than others. The uniforms were different as well. I think they have new uniforms, or they have different uniforms because they can't use pro. They look kind of silly. That's all I noticed. But, for the most part, it was like the same thing. I mean, some blown calls, nothing too egregious.
Reminded me of something that like Fidel Castro or some, third world puppet dictator. Or not puppet dictator, but
we're a puppet.
I guess. Well, referees could be puppet dictators if you want.
That is one way to think of it. Not that I would ever insult referees like that, but yes, they are. Here's the interesting thing. Okay, so the NFL had a similar situation, and it lasted 4 weeks or 2 weeks? Refresh my memory, last year.
Yeah, it was somewhere in that realm. Okay. It might have been 4 weeks because there was eventually.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it seemed like there was a tipping point.
The Seattle Green Bay basically was the tipping point. I don't remember what week it was. But here's the point of this, why I'm bringing this up is in the first week of the season, it wasn't. Everybody was like, okay, these guys are okay. They're a little out of place, but there's some anomalies, whatever, but they're okay. It really took a couple of weeks and the Green Bay Seattle game ending, which was just totally botched, for everybody to go, okay, this is unsustainable. I'm wondering if we're going to reach this point with MLS, or if the standard of refereeing is so low that, they could basically be okay, not great, and nobody notices. Everybody's like, meh, whatever. It's the same game. And that's kind of not a compliment to MLS, the fact that you could bring in substitute referees and there's no difference.
Yeah, it's tough to tell who has the upper hand in this situation. Like you said, is it MLS that basically will admit at this point that scab referees are of the similar quality to union referees? Or is it the referees themselves who look bad because, but there's an attitude that comes with the referees that we see on a regular basis, the Baltimore Toledos.
Mm-hmm.
Their command of the game, some of them are better than others, but there are some that just, it seems like they insert themselves into the match.
Yeah.
And, one thing that we didn't see this weekend was a red card, which, granted, there probably was a red card or two that was warranted, but, the view, I'm sure, is that a red card significantly changes the match. And so, unlike a penalty, which if you call one penalty, well, that's just a goal. I mean, it could decide the match. It might not. So, how long do you think this is going to take to resolve?
Oh, good question. I think it's going to be, they're definitely going to have these referees go through another week.
They've already announced it.
Yeah, they've already announced it. I'd give it to the end of the month. I think it'll go into April before it's resolved. I think both sides need each other, and they're eventually going to realize that and come to an agreement. But I could see this going for the rest of the month.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I would say the players probably are looking at this and just want to see how much, steel the referees show in this battle, because, the players themselves have a battle that's coming up after this season, and, what kind of a tactic are the players going to take in negotiating with the league? Are they going to you know, allow the argument that, oh, this league can't afford a long stoppage. You know, maybe some of the players themselves can't afford a long stoppage. I mean, a lot of them are making under 40 grand a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see, but you know, it is what it is. I think MLS would probably be better off just finding a way to help these referees, you know, come to the agreement, you know, find that middle ground that, I don't know why it's tough to find middle ground in these things, but I guess that's the story of American business. So
yeah.
Trying to scrape every dollar they can out of a situation. So anyway, I guess that's anything else you
I mean, no, I think it's time to move. Speaking of scraping every dollar out of people as possible, it's probably time to move on to the next story, which is the Columbus Crew TV deal. I'll talk a little bit about this one, and you know, if I get any details wrong, listeners, please write in and correct me. But basically, what happened at the beginning or at the end of the off season, MLS off season, was let me rewind it a little bit even further back. When the Columbus Crew got bought by their new ownership group in the off season, or excuse me, in the middle of last season, the ownership group signaled this is the beginning of a new era for, you know, the Columbus Crew. I mean, this was a franchise that's an original franchise, but kind of, I mean, they had been mocked for a number of things, their business practices, you know, even how they chose their name, their blue collar, you know, roots and things like that. I mean, this is a franchise that seems out of place in MLS 3.0 or whatever the nonsense is they're calling it now. So the new ownership group comes in and says, we're going to change things. We're going to modernize this team. We're going to even change the name and the brand. We're going to run this franchise like a modern MLS franchise. And at the end of the offseason, they signed a new TV deal with Time Warner Cable. And as you know, we all know, local television rights for MLS franchises are all over the map. But you know, usually local deals are good. The deal, however, was exclusive to Time Warner Cable. So if you were not a TWC subscriber in Ohio or whatever, you would not be able to see the Columbus Crew play on cable television. All right. Fair enough. You know, the backup plan is, of course, always MLS Live, which Earl, you and I both have, so we can watch many games. And it allows you to see, you know, games throughout the weekend. The problem is that someone, and this is where it gets kind of weird, is enforcing the ban on local, basically blacking out local games that are available on TV. Because with MLS Live, if your local team, and I think it's a 75-mile radius or something like that, has a game shown on local TV, they're blacking out the game on MLS Live. So because the Columbus Crew have a deal with Time Warner Cable that they're going to show the game on Time Warner's TV station locally, it's blacking it out for everybody within a, I believe, a 75-mile radius of Columbus. That hasn't sat well with many Columbus Crew fans who now feel like they have to go out and buy Time Warner Cable in order to see their favorite team, and they feel like that's being the team and the league imposing a certain cable provider upon them. And obviously that's, as you can see, doesn't sit well with a lot of people. I mentioned it's kind of fuzzy because, you know, how the blackout works is kind of basically, the team and the league are pointing fingers at each other saying it's your fault. No, it's your fault. The fact that they have to black out these games. So that's not settled. I don't think it's quite settled. I'm checking right now to see if there has been any updates. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on this, Earl. I mean, the idea of signing a deal with a cable company and, you know, what the Columbus Crew fans are going through. And, yeah, I don't know.
The only thing I can say is being someone who lives in the Philadelphia region, I mean, we've dealt with these types of issues with Philadelphia sports. Comcast Sportsnet has a similar type stranglehold on this market if you are a Phillies, 76ers, or Flyers fan. You basically, if you want to watch their games aside from a couple of games a week that are on public access, on over-the-air channels, you have to have Comcast cable, or you can also have Verizon, but you have to have either cable or whatever you want to call it, whatever fiber optic, because there is a law. I don't want to get into the details. Anybody in Philadelphia would know this. So, I mean, it's not the first time this has happened. It's sad. I think, for the union, I'm pretty sure the union have been exempted from this, which is great because, well, it's not great anymore because I got rid of DirecTV. So now I have Comcast. I can watch the union games on Comcast, which is still great. But I mean, for people who have DirecTV, if they didn't lift the blackout for the union, then you wouldn't be able to watch it on MLS Live, which would really suck for them, and which would be the exact same situation as happened to Columbus. You know, you'd think the league could try to remedy this, but I don't know if – I mean, especially since, you know, it's a subscription package. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're paying for it. So, you know, you pay $60 or whatever. You know, you'd think that would entitle you to watch it. But, you know, I've dealt with this in other sports and other leagues in Philadelphia here, and it's annoying. I've written the FCC. I've written till I'm blue in the fingers, and so to speak. So it's tough. I hope that they figure this out because, yeah, there are a lot of fans in Columbus that I'm sure would like to watch this through MLS Live. And MLS Live is actually one of the more affordable subscription packages out there. So
true. Although their in-game commentary is kind of annoying, but that's just me.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they are working on getting both home feeds, probably for next season. That's been something that's been thrown around on Twitter a bit between, I believe it's Jonathan Tannenwald, he's at the goalkeeper, and also Chris Schlosser, who is the digital media guy for MLS. Seem to have a little back and forth every once in a while on Twitter about this.
So what you're saying is I don't have to listen to Shep Messing anymore as of next year.
Maybe next year. That would be nice.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well. So, so you could choose not to listen to the New York guys.
Good.
But anyway, I guess we should move on and finish out our discussion of the MLS matches. This one, I'm sure, is going to break your heart. Vancouver and New York faced off up in the Pacific Northwest.
Speaking of the New York Red Bulls, the defending Supporters Shield winners coming out to start, you know, brand new start to the season, going to want to start strong and lay a big fat egg. Vancouver Whitecaps 4, New York Red Bulls 1, continuing the trend of new coaches winning in their debut, at least with games that I watched this weekend. You know, for this game, if you look at the statistics, it's kind of an oddity. New York dominated the major statistics. They had almost 58% possession in this game, and their passing accuracy was about 85%. But, you know, on the, Vancouver just blistered the New York goal, 14 attempts on goal, 4 goals, of course. And, even early in this match, from the very beginning, they had a number of very, very good attempts on goal. They probably could have been up, 4-0 in the first half. They were only up 1-0 at halftime, of course, with Kenny Miller converting, a first half penalty. Well, let's talk about that since we have it. Basically, the penalty was called because of a ball put into the box. Eckersley put up his hands, the New York defender, required in the offseason, put up his hands to block his face. Referee called a penalty on that. And it's one of those situations where, you know, if a ball was coming at your face at, 90 miles an hour, however much it is, what would you do? You'd probably put your hands up and try and protect your beautiful mug.
I'd grab my tissues to stop the gusher that would come out of my nose.
Oh yeah.
Because I'm tough. Tough as nails. Unlike Richard Eckersley.
I'm not going to call him not tough, personally. He looks like a very rough guy. But anyway, ball comes screaming to his face. He instinctively puts it up to block it, and lo and behold, penalty. Kenny Miller converts for the first goal, and then Vancouver breaks it open in the second half. Consolation goal for Bradley Wright Phillips in the 91st minute, but very strong win for Vancouver. However, we've seen this before. We've seen Vancouver start off a season strong, only to fade at the end. So let's see what happens with this Vancouver team. And over to our Houston correspondent, Earl Reed, for the Houston-New England game.
So Houston and New England. New England has been sort of the sexy pick because they came on strong last year. I think a lot of people feel like they're going to be able to follow that up with another solid campaign this year. I think in my preview, I had kind of dogged on them a little bit. And maybe they listened because they came out flat. They basically gave up a goal in the first 2 minutes to Houston. Will Bruin got two goals. Oscar Boniek Garcia got a goal. 4-0 the final for Houston at BBVA Compass Stadium. Just looked like, I don't know if they just weren't ready to play. A number of glaring mishaps. Jose Gonsalves, maybe he listened too much to the hype of him being the defender of the year last year because, I know he wants a contract extension or, a pay upgrade or whatnot up there in New England. I'm not sure he's going to get it. So I don't know if that had any influence on it, but definitely, in the first goal, he was at fault and probably in the second one. And, Houston, I think this isn't a big surprise. I think everybody looks at Houston and says, there's not a whole lot that you look at them and just say, wow, they're, the best team in MLS. There's a lot of guys that are good. I mean, definitely Boniek Garcia is good. Bruin can be good. Brad Davis is pretty good. He's probably going to go to Brazil on the U.S. team. Mm-hmm. There's something that's a bit unremarkable about that team at times. And I don't know. They just came right out and shellacked the Revolution. So, we always talk about Kinnear being a playoff guy. Well, maybe he told the team, think of this like a playoff game because they just, came out and, took the doors off of the car known as the Revolution, and now New England is going to be looking to rebound from this. I believe they're up against Philadelphia this coming week, but good start for Bruin. I think he had sort of a sophomore slump, if indeed last year was his sophomore year. I think it was, but he had some struggles last year. Good to see him get off on the front foot and get a couple goals. And, maybe Houston will be a team that everybody expects them to each year. They never seem to really do it until the playoffs. So let's move on to the other Texan team, the FC Dallas.
The FC Dallas versus the Montreal Impact. This game was started in a torrential downpour, quite an ugly, ugly scene. It almost was like a Seattle-type weather situation. So just to note that, the fact that I don't think they have the attendance in the box orb, but considering how nasty the weather was, very impressed with the attendance in Dallas. That was not sarcasm. This game ended 3-2 to the Horns. That's what they go by, right? The Horns? Is that what Texans call them?
The Hoops.
Thank you. Sorry. I knew it was something that began with an H. Talking points from this one, Mauro Diaz in the 24th minute draws a foul in the penalty area. Jabrowski sneezed on him and he fell over and the penalty was given to them, which Blas Perez converted for the second Dallas goal of the night. This game had a total of 27 attempts on goal. And 33 fouls. So that tells you what kind of game it was, I think, right there in those two stats. The only other thing I note is Andrew Wenger, I guess he's whatever, started this game for Wenger. See, I go back and forth between the Wenger thing. Started this game for Montreal and had a very nice header for the second Montreal goal late in this match in the in the second half, 65th minute, just really good header that I think should have been a goal of the week candidate. Probably is not going to be, but Dallas, this is a nice win for them. Good way to start off the season strong. and the Oscar Pereja regime. And for Montreal, you know, there are some positives to take away from this, but, you know, there are definitely some negatives for both teams, especially on defense, to take away from this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Dallas has been another team that sort of is, you know, a team some people want to say are going to be, you know, sort of a sleeper team. I mean, we'll have to see. Pereja did wonders there in Colorado last year, so...
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe this is the start of something good for them. But Montreal is also a team that I wouldn't rate too heavily.
No, nor do
I. Because so I mean, this could be one of those deals where, you know, you get a couple of basement teams up against each other. And I mean, and the next the final match that we'll talk about may be the same type of thing, and it actually had the same kind of scoreline. Chivas USA hosted Chicago the day after the Galaxy had hosted RSL. At the StubHub Center. This match, I believe, was on, what is it? What do they call it? Unimas
mm-hmm.
is the name of the
correct
station. Yeah, nice.
Thank you.
And Chivas USA comes out with the victory. Obviously, they've recently gone through this where MLS has you know, purchased them from Jorge Vergara, and they get a win under their belts to start the season. They are actually... undefeated, as opposed to the Galaxy, who are defeated. So that's paradox, whatever you want to call it. But Eric Torres got the first goal in the second half for Chivas USA. That was, I believe, on a penalty. That was another one that was probably one of the more reasonable penalty calls. Although I still think that there was some. I mean, it's tough to have a penalty and not have some form of simulation involved in it in some fashion. But and then Chivas took a set, you know, the 2-0 lead with Thomas McNamara, who has sort of a ridiculous haircut, but I guess that's the norm now in MLS. So I believe he's a rookie, and so he picked that one up with an assist by Mauro Rosales on that and Leandro Barrera. Then Chicago came storming back through 2 goals in 7 minutes. Benji Hoya and Quincy Ameriqua both got goals for Chicago to pull them back. But Chivas pulled it out in the 2 minutes from full time with Bobby Burling heading a ball home off of a Mauro Rosales corner. Coming up big there for the Goats. So what might be the last season of the Goats is as far as that particular moniker goes, although I have a sneaking suspicion they'll always be known as the Goats. You know, just maybe figuratively, maybe not. I don't know. I guess it depends on how much of a full makeover they do as far as the...
Well, if they continue to finish in last place, then there'll always be Goats in MLS.
Yeah, well, we'll see. They haven't gotten anywhere but there yet, so... So that's about it, you know. Some... interesting results, I think, you know, seeing teams like Vancouver and Columbus do well, Houston kicking tail, but then you have teams like Sporting Kansas City and New York get off to a slow start. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But let's bring you up to date on the CONCACAF Champions League. Two of the matches, as of this recording, have been completed. On Tuesday night, San Jose hosted Toluca from the Liga MX, can I say the Liga MX, or is it just Liga MX?
You're asking the wrong dude.
Is that going to tick off hardcore Mexican Primera division?
Yeah, you have a Eurofile reputation, so you might as well go with it.
Maybe I have an Amerifile. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. So San Jose was able to get a late draw. The Goonies do not die on Tuesday night. They are able to pull out the draw. That's not necessarily a good result, because then they still have to go down to Toluca next week for the return leg, and they could very well get their hats handed to them down there. Tonight, it just finished up. Sporting Kansas City did gain the 1-0 victory over Cruz Azul at Sporting Park. So they will be going down to Mexico next week. So we'll see if that can hold up, or if they can actually, you know, get a result down there too to get them through. And looks like it's just about ready to start. The LA Galaxy will be hosting Tijuana, sort of a we'll call it a Southern California slash, I guess, what is that? Baja California.
I call it the Margaritaville matchup.
Yeah, the Margaritaville Classico. How about
there
that?
There you go. I like it.
So, yeah, so we'll see what happens. This is MLS's attempt to get through this. Basically, every team is facing a Mexican squad, so it's not going to be easy. This is sort of like the bane of MLS's existence in this competition. Could be no MLS teams make the semifinals, which would be basically a disaster as far as most people are concerned, I think. But I don't know how MLS feels about it.
I don't either.
How do you feel?
I haven't asked them yet, so I'm not sure.
And so, I don't think we don't have anything else to cover tonight, do we?
I think we're good. We've covered a lot tonight. It's been a lot of hard work.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing the hard work, getting ready and
doing my hair.
Hope, yeah, all of it, whatever that means.
So wait, we're doing a video of this show, right? This is a video recording.
Yeah. Oh no.
What? I did my hair for nothing?
Yeah, get your camera up above the desk, man.
Oh, hey, not that kind of show.
So enough of that. Robert, I appreciate you doing the show with me each week, and I look forward to again next week. We got some more matches coming up this weekend, and I'm sure there'll be some more news in MLS. Maybe we'll have some national team stuff going on, too. We'll see.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, I'm excited for the second week, but yeah, we'll have to see how the teams fare tonight and also next week with respects to the Champions League. And for you, those of you listening, we're going to be recording pretty much on Wednesday nights from now on. So look for us on Thursday morning, probably getting them released. And anyway, for Robert, hey, I'm Earl Reed. Robert, why don't you close them out?
Well, we hope that over this next weekend, you get all 3 points.